This is Flight Training the Way I See It with Mike Schiffer. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Flight Training the Way I See It with your host, me, Mike Shiflett. We're going to talk about opinion, talk about news and techniques, tips about flying. That's what our podcast is all about. It's a monthly podcast. You can find more information about CFI Bootcamp, our programs and extra content at CFIbootcamp.com. You can also join a membership site for free at CFIbootcamp.com. It's called Bootcamp Plus, and you get access to a lot of nice things. In addition to that, we do a power hour every Saturday from noon until 1 o'clock Eastern time. And that's on a single subject, something like eights on pylons, the mathematics behind that. We've done that before. We've done pinch hitter courses. We've done all kinds of things in an hour. We've tied it all up, finish it all in an hour every Saturday. This will be, the one coming up will be the 111th tomorrow, which would be Tomorrow is October the 22nd. And so then after that, there'll be others. So you can go to our website, and there's a red bar at CFIbootcamp.com at the top, and it talks about how to opt in for the power hour. Then you'll get a reminder midweek. You'll get one an hour before the show, and finally when the show starts, just before it starts. So that way you won't miss out. So there's that. If you want to listen to all 111 now power hours that will be by the time this podcast goes out, the only way to do that is to join our paid membership site, which is only $9 a month. It's $22 if you go now, but if you are a Power Hour subscriber and you go to that onto our website, CFIbootcamp.com, and then you click on to the red bar and opt in, you'll get it for $9 right after the show, so any show you attend. So that's a pretty good deal. There's a lot of extra content in there, too. There's tribal knowledge videos we did at Jekyll Island, Georgia, CFI Roundtable about some of those interesting topics, hard to teach things, all that sort of stuff was done there. And so those videos are in there as well. Anyway, enough about that. What do we come here to do? So this is the video podcast of the newsletter for October 2022. So I wanted to give you an update. There was a DPE symposium last week, the week of the 10th, that was put on by FASANA, the Flight School Association of North America. A lot of people showed up, and a lot of FAA people also showed up. And so there were some updates there, and I wanted to pass those along to you before they even hit mainstream. So the first is the FAA announced the activation dates for new and revised knowledge test questions. So plan to take your knowledge test before these dates. And remember that it takes a while for the test prep providers to actually get a hold of the new test questions and answers, depending on how many were either revised or how many were put in new. So the time to take a test would not be right after that happens, because there'll be some test questions you've not seen before. The update cycle, which is in our newsletter, which if you go to our website, CFIbootcamp.com, you can also opt in for the electronic version of this podcast and the newsletter, and you'll have a written record of that. That'll be January for 2023. It's January the 30th, April 24th, July 31st, and October 30th. Those are the dates they're going to drop in new test content. Okay, on another topic, the FAA is clearing the way to release new ACSs. By the way, what we're going to cover in the rest of the podcast is going to be flying hacks. How about no? We'll also cover this month's three pro airplane tips, basically how to fly like a pro and how to use these tips to improve your flying. Then we're going to look at a coordination exercise you can do, which is kind of fun, aiming the airplane, and what's the difference between Part 141 and 61 school. That's all going to cover that within this 30 minutes that we've got, or less than that now. So let's move on to what the ACS, this was the DPE symposium. We're eagerly waiting these to be released. So FAA representatives were on hand at the DPE symposium to update and answer questions. The big question is, when will the release of the ACSs be, which are currently held up due to challenges to whether they represent rulemaking or not? The FAA has a little backdoor workaround. It's called something about referencing an FAR. They're allowed to put things that are controlling by not going through the rulemaking process as long as the FAR is in reference. So there's a specific name for it. I've forgotten the name of it. But basically it means if they can get that process to go, then they'll be able to release them anytime they want. So they just need to clear it with chief counsel, which they're making sure everything's good. But there's something interesting I read. A little tidbit there was all the ACS maneuvers and such have to line up word for word, line by line, with what's in the FAR. Now, you know the FAA uses words like performance maneuvers in the regulation. There's no definition of that in the FAR. It's in the handbooks and in the ACS as to what a performance maneuver is. So we may see some retitling, shuffling around. I don't know what'll happen there, but that's what's happening. So that's the solution. They're not giving an expected date yet for that. So I don't know if they know. Someone knows, but they're not really saying about when they're thinking about doing it. But we'll be poised and ready for that when and if that happens. The other thing are being held up are the handbooks because they're in the same boat. So if there are other handbooks, and I'm not aware of which ones would come out, the airplane flying handbook was recently released. So I doubt it's that one. Maybe the PHAC, Pilot's Handbook of Aeronautical Knowledge, that could be in the pipeline. So we'll see. Let's talk about another topic, flying hacks. How about no? How about no? So no flying hacks, please. These hacks are life hacks, are like for cooking, removing a stain, you know, that kind of thing. They have no place in flying whatsoever. And I'm not really fond of a particular YouTuber. I mean, I've taught with this person. And if you're listening to the podcast, I don't need to say your name, but I don't think you should have done it. And I've worked with this person. Does a great job, by the way, really good job. But then this thing came out, and I went like, why? So anyway, what it was is a hack how to do a lazy eight. But it's not really how to do a lazy eight. It's basically if you just do this thing, the airplane will kind of do it for you. And well, this defeats the entire purpose of the maneuver. I mean, why not just not test it or not put in, just not use it? If you're going to just hack it, the whole purpose of learning something like a lazy eight is to make you a better pilot, to improve you. You will, if you're able to do a real lazy eight, you will see your coordination will become way more automatic if you do it right. If you hack at it, it will just be something to get through. And you can't approach flying that way. Flying is not something to get through. Flying is three things. It's the technical side of flying, which is the understanding, the decision-making part of flying, and then there's the art of flying, right? And the art is what we're talking about here. Anybody can learn how to fly an airplane, but can you learn how to fly an airplane well without automation? That's the question. So Lazy 8 will do that. So anyway, this you can look at it if you want, this YouTube hack. And I just don't recommend those kind of things because it really doesn't help you. It's just something to, like, is it going to pass a test? Maybe, I suppose. But are you going to be able to really use it for any other thing? No, not really. So it just doesn't extend to other things. A Lazy 8, the actual, if you don't know what that is, by the way, that's a maneuver in the commercial pilot program, and you can find it in the airplane flying handbook. And it's two climbing and descending 180-degree turns where the flight controls are always in motion. So the airplane is being flown like in a half pipe on a skateboard or a snowboard, right? You come up to the apex of it, come down. Those loops are symmetrical, same height, same air speeds, both left and right. And the idea here is none of the flight controls are ever stationary. So you have to constantly coordinate this airplane and anticipate what's happening. And then it becomes automatic. So if you do that, your flying will improve. I guarantee that it will make you understand coordination a lot better. But if you hack it, nothing improves. So sorry that I had to say that, but I did see it. And people have said, oh, do this. Why bother with that? Well, why bother is I understand there's a test. I get that. But you really want to approach flying as to be the best about it you can, right? You shouldn't just be hacking at things. So there you go. Said enough about that. All right. Moving on. Let's talk about this month's three pro tips. Those would be fun, right? You got to have some little tips to take out into the airplane and do some things with, and these will certainly do it, all right? So the first one is let's use a good mnemonic for the before takeoff checks. A lot of times what happens is we get caught up in a checklist because we don't use it right. So the way maybe you've been taught to use a checklist is as a do list. It's like you look at it, it says this, then you do that, then you put your head back in the checklist, it says this, you do that, don't do that. It is not a do list. What will happen is one day you'll skip a bunch of those things or think you did it or get lost in the checklist and not know where you are. But the most common thing is to absolutely miss something, not do it, because you skipped over it. Right, because your eye lost contact with the page while you were doing something else. So this is not the way to do it. The way to do it is to use a flow check or a mnemonic checklist of some kind first. Do everything, and then use the checklist to run down and scan each thing. Your eye doesn't leave the page, and you say, did I do all this? Now, if something you missed, you'll know it, and you'll be able to fix it right there. So what mnemonic am I talking about? I'm talking about the classic cigar tips. cigar tips. It's really good, right? So C-I-G-A-R. C is for controls. This works, by the way, this works so great. I can fly a Beech Baron on this checklist. I can fly any piston I can think of can be handled with this checklist, supported by the manufacturers or other written checklists. But this thing is just magical. So C is for controls, free and correct. I, instruments. You check both the flight instruments and the engine instruments and electrical instruments. So you'll be checking those. Then G is gas. Make sure the fuel's sufficient and the fuel selector's on the proper tank. A is for attitude. That means set all the trim controls for takeoff. Then R, cigar, is run-up. So you check that the magnetos drop within parameters and the engine and electrical instruments are normal when there's power on. So last three, four things. The cigar, now we got the tips part. T, transponder. Make sure the code is set and it's switched on. I, interior doors and windows. Make sure those are closed and the baggage is secured. So I is for interior. P is for position lights and beacon lights. So make sure they're switched on if they're necessary. And the beacon and strobe is on, if unless it's distracting you or somebody. And then last is S, the seatbelts and security. Make sure that's done and there's been a safety briefing that you've done for the takeoff and with the passengers, okay? So that's a really good mnemonic checklist. Then pick up your written checklist. Now, I think you'll find it goes a lot smoother and you'll get lost so much. By the way, if you're one of these people who need an extensive checklist, a checklist shouldn't be teaching you how to fly. You don't need a checklist that says put the key in the ignition. You don't need that. You don't need a checklist that says open the door. You don't need that, right? So the manufacturer has the minimum run checklist. Those are fine. And you can photocopy those and use those in the airplane. Others like the Checkmate checklist, but I find the print a little small and a little bit get lost in that thing a little bit. So I don't know, but pick something, okay? Great. Next thing we're going to do is we're going to do a coordination exercise. Ooh, we're going to improve your coordination. As much as the Lazy 8, if you don't hack them, we'll help you with that. This is something people struggle with, and I got a great fix for it. So what happens is, are you uncoordinated when you're starting and stopping a turn? When you roll left, the nose of the airplane swings right if you don't fix it. That's called adverse yaw. Now, most people would say, if I ask them, I always ask in the CFI class, how do you know or stay coordinated? And they say, well, you use the ball. That is absolutely incorrect. So if you're using the ball to tell you what to do, you don't know what to do to just not have it do it in the first place. In other words, you're making a reactive reaction to what you should have not left leave the center anyway, right? So if you know how to coordinate an airplane properly, you can take the ball out. The only time you need it is during IFR, right? VFR, you don't need it. So everything you need to know, you either look out and see or you feel, right? And if you don't have this tactile sense about flying, you need to get with someone who can teach it to you, because it's not hard and it goes well. So let me just say about coordination. Usually every power hour, I say something about it because it's such a pain. But how do you know when you're coordinated? It's a good question, right? So let me just tell you. If this is an airplane, which I don't have one right now, but my student did a great thing today. He didn't have an airplane either. We had to do a Zoom remote call. So he took a pen and he put a credit card in the thing that holds the pen in your pocket, and it looked like a little airplane. It was pretty good, I have to say, right? When you're down to nothing, use that. So anyway, if this is a longitudinal axis of the airplane, the tip to the tail, when it's continuously aligned with the flight path of the airplane's coordinated. So if you're going straight ahead and your flight path is straight ahead and that tip to tail is on the flight path, you are coordinated. If the airplane skids like this, and the airplane's still going that way because the flight path is that way, you're not coordinated because the tip to tail is not there. In a turn, if you're turning and the flight path is here and the nose is way off to the right of that, you're slipping in the turn, even though the flight path is not where your nose is pointed, which way the airplane is going. If you're skidding, you're inside of that turn. And you'll know that. How will you know that? This is pretty interesting one-liner here to give you. So unless you're doing aerobatics, or unless you're doing a crosswind takeoff, a crosswind landing, or a slip to a landing, you have to feel like you're sitting straight up in your seat like a steel rod at all times. If you're slipping even a little bit, sliding around the seat, if you're being, the magnet is drawing you towards this window or that window, you're doing it wrong. Okay? So that's what you need to keep in mind. So as you begin to feel yourself slide, you can push in a pedal that brings you right back to center. And when you do that enough times, you'll find that it's easy to coordinate an airplane. It's not hard. And it makes flying elegant. So let's talk about this rolling into a turn. When we roll into a turn, the aileron over here has got to go down to generate roll, and this one goes up. So what happens is we roll, that's true, but because this aileron goes down, it creates a lot of induced drag, and so the airplane's nose swings the other way. It swings, this goes this way, the nose goes the other way, as long as aileron's being applied. Your job is to use enough pedal to stop that from happening, okay? Now the question then becomes, how much do you do? Well, most airplanes have pretty balanced aileron and rudder flight controls, meaning that proportional amounts of each usually does the initial trick, right? But to really develop the sense of it, we're gonna do something called aileron reversals. So now remember, for anything I teach you, anything online, this is not flight instruction. And you should not ever take any of this stuff and do it on your own without having a good CFI next to you. The CFI is gonna let you practice these techniques, point out anything you're doing wrong or anything they don't like. And also, they can take care of flight safety, like not hitting somebody, or if the airplane gets in some awkward position, they can correct for that. Just make sure that you're with a CFI who can ensure flight safety, okay? So this is how we do the aileron reversals. So this is for a 172. You can modify for other airplanes based on the speed I give you. So, okay, so first, let's pick a safe altitude above 2,000 feet AGL. Then let's slow the airplane to about 70. So normal cruise speed, slow cruise for training is about 90. So this is about 20 knots below. So whatever training airplane you have, around that same number works, okay? Somewhere around there. Then line up the nose of the airplane on a big feature, some prominent feature. Here in Miami, we have canals, so we use a canal or a town way in the distance. There in Palo Alto, where I just was last week doing the CFI class, we have big features like mountains, Mount Diablo, right? Big reservoirs. So use those. So line up on that. Now then, when you've lined up on that, make sure you're level flight, trim for level flight. And then what I want you to do is take the ailerons with your feet not on the pedals, and I want you to turn to the right fully, about this pace, and then turn to the left fully, and never stop. Don't stop in the middle, don't stop when you got here, nothing. Just do this, aileron reversal. And what you're gonna see is the airplane is gonna first, gonna go this way, but the nose is gonna go, you're gonna feel yourself, the nose go the other way. And you do the other way, and you'll feel the bank go that way and the nose go in the opposite direction of that you want to turn. That's adverse yaw. That's what you're trying to eliminate, okay? So if you do that enough times, and what you're looking is you'll see the bank happens, but you'll see the nose swings off the point that you've got in front of you. It won't be on that canal or Mount Diablo anymore, right? It'll be going the other way, the bank. So then what I want you to do now, after you've had exposed that a little bit, now put your feet back on the floor. And make sure your instructor is looking out and can exercise all the flight controls if they need to. Right now, what I want you to do is to start the turn in that direction and use enough rudder to keep the point, the nose of the airplane, on that point. Don't let it drift off the point. And that's how much rudder to use. Because you think about a pure aileron roll, if you did an aileron roll and you had adverse yaw, it would be really ugly. You start the turn, it goes like this, and finally after you neutralize it, it'll kind of be like this, and the other way, it'll be awful. So you use enough rudder, so this is what would happen. It would just do this, right there is the point you're looking at, it would just roll right around it. There would be no adverse yaw. There's zero adverse yaw. So you have to use enough rudder to keep that point fixed on the spinner or whatever you're using in the front of the airplane, the middle of the airplane, your middle, wherever that is, depending on what kind of airplane you're flying, but you want to keep that point from not moving. And then once the turn starts, after you've got the ailerons neutral, then what's gonna happen is you just need to use enough rudder to eliminate the left turning tendencies. And you'll know that by how? Not looking at the ball, no, you're gonna feel it. You feel yourself, or you're starting to slide this way or that way, you push the appropriate pedal so you don't do that, right? That's how you do it. That's pretty good. And if you do that, I think you'll find your flying will improve like really greatly. A lot of people struggle with that. Last tip, pro tip, is going to be aiming the airplane, of all things. We got to aim the airplane. Yeah, I know. When you land, you have to have the airplane touch down on the runway. Ideally, you'd like to pick a spot on the runway where you'd like to touch down. Unfortunately, people get this wrong too much, right? A lot. They get caught up in the altitude is controlled by power and airspeed's controlled by pitch. That's only true at low speeds because what we're training for is a condition where if you get too slow and you have all this induced drag, right? And you have no more power, right? And so what people do, they pitch up to to try to change the picture if they're low to get on glide path, but there's nothing to pitch up to because the airplane is near the approximate stall speed. So if you try that, it will stall and then the airplane won't be happy, you won't be happy. So in that particular case, you've got to push the nose forward so you can get rid of all that induced drag, and then you'll have throttle or power to climb with and change the airspeed. So that's what they're saying. But in high speeds, you really are approach the landing speed. You don't have to do it that way. All right, you don't have, that's only when you're slow. But again, get with a good instructor and try this out. So remember that the airplane is going where it's pointed, right? Pilots get that wrong too. If the airplane's descending, where's it going to? They'll say, oh, I use 1500 or 1800 RPM. To what end, right? We want to deliver the airplane to a point on the ground. So that point has to be known to us and we have to aim the airplane at that point if we want to go there, right? Sounds simple, right? But we're not aiming anymore. And we control the airspeed with what? The power, right? So here's a way we can do it. So when you have the point that you want to descend to, when it's halfway between the cowling and your cowling, and the horizon and the cowling of the airplane, when it's right in the middle, that's about a 3-degree glide path. And so if you'll just keep it there, so you keep it in the middle no matter what, it just gets bigger, right? The runway or whatever point is just going to keep getting bigger, but it's to stay there. You're going to descend at about a 3-4 degree glide path, and you're going to control the airspeed with power. Because at that angle, 3 degrees, all these training airplanes, you're able to maintain the approach speed. If you try to make it too steep, you can re-aim down steeper, but you won't be able to maintain the speed. It'll be too high. And the other way, it'd be too shallow. So that's the point. You're going to keep that point there, and you're going to aim the airplane. And when you do that, you can touch down wherever you said you wanted to, right? The airplane's going somewhere. It's what spot's not moving on the windscreen is where you're going. All right, so let's not lose sight of that. So try that out. That's three things there for you to work on. Wow, that's kind of fun, right? Three things to work on this week or next week or whenever you're going to go flying again. And again, if you want a copy of what I'm telling you in words, right, go to our website and opt in for our newsletter. And then you'll get a PDF of this sent to you when it's all prettied up, along with sometimes we put special offers in there or other sorts of things go in there. So you get connected to us pretty well through that. If you're content just listening, that's fine. You don't need to do anything. You're already on the list or you wouldn't be hearing this right now. Unless you happen to join Spotify, if you listen to us on Spotify by random chance or the Apple podcast site, any place that has podcasts, we're everywhere. So flight training the way I see it. Pass the word, spread the love. Okay. Let's look at the last thing we want to talk about today, which is going to be what's the difference between a Part 141 and Part 61 school. So first, the FAA does not define an unapproved school. In the business, we call this Part 61 schools, but the FAA doesn't really have a name for it. They don't say unapproved. They just don't say it's an approved school. Most schools around the country are not approved. There are two types. There's a 141, Part 141. They're operating under Part 141 rules, FAR Part 141, and there's Part 142 schools. Part 142 schools use simulation technologies. They're simulator firms, like flight safeties. Those kind of people could be 142 schools. Most flight schools are going to be Part 141 schools because they're training in something other than a flight training device mostly, right? Or things you can't do in a private pilot program and a 142 program. So they're going to be, and they have approved curriculum. So the FAA has to come out, approve the curriculum, got to meet the minimum times that are there in FAR Part 141. You can look through those if you're so inclined and see what's there. And then you get an air agency certificate, the school does. They're operating as an air agency and they're approved to do certain courses, right? This requires quite a lot of record keeping. It requires the chief pilot, assistant chief to do proficiency checks with the FAA once a year and for inspections to occur at the school's facility where the inspector comes out and does records matching and sees how everything's going. Occasionally does proficiency check or audits the students' graduation certificates or whatever there is to do. It's a bunch of work to do. So they'll do that. But each curriculum has to be approved that you want to teach from. And then all the instructors who work for that 141 school have to pass proficiency checks given by the chief, assistant chief, can be sometimes check airmen. And then they follow that curriculum. And the curriculum is syllabus, It could have standards in there. It could be how we do particular maneuvers or things, that kind of thing. So that's what you do. Now, so a lot of schools won't do that because a Part 61 school who has independent flight instructors are really unlikely ever to do such a thing because as soon as you control, as soon as you as a flight school control how a CFI teaches, you're telling them use this syllabus, use this. Now you have control over them. They're no longer an independent contractor. They've got to be an employee. So most flight schools aren't interested in that whole thing. Well, let's talk about an advantage here of being a Part 141 school. Well, the time to get the certificates can be lower. The first one, private, is not really that helpful. I mean, it's 35 hours instead of 40. No one does it in that time anyway, so that's really not that helpful. But for the instrument rating, you don't have to do the 50 hours of cross-country that's required under Part 61. You need 0 hours of cross-country time, except for what you did for the private. You can start your instrument right away. So that can be a big cost savings to someone who now doesn't have to fly 50 hours across country. And also for the commercial certificate, you can do a commercial, depending on the program, as low as about 160 hours instead of 250. So there's substantial savings there, and that's likely. I mean, you're likely to be able to finish a commercial in less than 250 hours, right? 250 is what we need under Part 61. There's no reason you couldn't finish it up in 160 to 200 hours, and be a flight instructor right after that. All you have to have is a commercial pilot certificate with instrument rating, so it doesn't say a particular amount of time. So that would be very helpful. So one of the other significant advantages, and probably in my opinion, probably the only real reason the school wants to do this, outside of the cost savings, at which they could peddle that as something, is that you have the ability to offer an I-20 immigration form application to a foreign student, to an international student. And if approved, then they can come over at your facility and do flight training. And so that allows, because you can't do flight training in the U.S. unless you're a citizen or a resident or you're here on a visa that allows you to do it. Flight training is one of those things, like you're going to university, that require not a tourist visa, something else. So you can do that if you have the correct approvals. In addition to part the FAA approving Part 141 for you, you'll need the U.S. Department of Homeland Security to be able to authorize that for you. There's another department, Customs and Immigration maybe, but it's called, I forgot the name of the program, but it's something student visa program. So anyway, that's that. You apply for that. Most people get that, and then you can train foreign students, and there's a lot of money in that kind of training, right? The flight schools, that a lot of them who have it, are quite large, like AeroGuard. They do Chinese program. They have 400 Chinese students at any one time, right? They're quite large. So you do that. You can also accept VA benefits if you're approved by the VA, but you have to be a 141 school to be able to do VA benefit training. So you've got that, and they'll pay for a lot of things there. And then lastly, FedEx and other companies will pay for training a certain amount. Before it was $10,000 towards pilot certificates for a private pilot and so on for others, but you've got to be a 141 school to be eligible to get the money from FedEx. So there are good reasons for it. The disadvantages are, again, oversight. Oversight is rough. And then the other is keeping a specific pass rate. The pass rate's 80% on the first time. However, it's 80% both knowledge tests and flight tests. So at one time, some of these larger schools had pass rates around 60, 65%, which is pretty low for private. But because everybody has to go through the knowledge test for private through their ground school, that counts as the same pass as the practical. So they're able to keep their certificates. Otherwise, they probably would have to be doing a way better job. Okay, so one thing that most 141 schools aren't good at is CFI training. So it takes too long to use an approved 141 syllabus. The time is just way too long. It's 25 hours of flight. That's way too much. And also it takes between 2 or 3 months or more, right? And flight schools are usually not top heavy with 2-year CFIs. You have to have a certain amount of experience. Typically it's 2 years and 200 hours of dual given. It can be something other, but a side note, but that's 400 hours. And train only at that specific program. And then you have to have had 80% of your students have to have passed on the first time, and you have to have at least 5 of them. So that's the other way you could do it. But most of these schools just don't have the staff, and they recognize, hey, if we take this 400-hour CFI, it's probably not going to do a pretty good job of teaching the the class. You need to have more experience than that. So we consider CFI training a specialty. It's one of those things that's a specialty. It's not the run-of-the-mill stuff, so not everybody can do it. Most are not going to have enough, even the 2 years, are not going to have enough knowledge to do the fundamentals instructing. They've long forgot that. Not going to be good at endorsement scenarios, like complicated things like taking someone from rotorcraft helicopter into airplane at the same level. How do you solo them? What training is required? It's like a lot to that scenario. So we do that. So fortunately for U-141 schools, or even schools that are big enough, we have a press-in-place syllabus that allows you to teach our program at your facility. How you like that? Not pretty good, huh? And it shortens the amount of time it takes to create a CFI. That's the point. So they only need to be on campus at your facility for 2 weeks, and they can get through this thing because we have an online course. The online course takes the student 60 hours or so to go through. So by the time they come there, they're kind of topped off with some good knowledge, and you're doing how to use it stuff. Our 7-day course, what you'd be able to teach, is all scenario driven. So we do things like the mechanics for soloing a student. We do teaching practice. We do how to take that person from rotorcraft helicopter into airplane. How do we solo them? All these scenarios we play with. So when the student is done, it's actually like they've done this job before. They have all the nuts and bolts. They sign things with their CFI number that's going to be. By the way, that number will be your commercial pilot certificate or ATP with embedded right after that with the same minus 3330524. It's a CFI after that. It's part of the number. So whatever your commercial pilot certificate is or ATP, you put CFI after it, and that's your CFI number. That's what it's going to be. Okay, so there's that. So can you imagine telling a student that you only need to be here 2 weeks and you'll have your CFI and start working here in the next 2 or 3 weeks? They're, wow, look at that. That's something pretty good. So if you want more information on our program that lets you run it at your school, then you can send me an email at mike@cfibootcamp.com, mike@cfibootcamp.com, and I'll send you all the details. We have several schools doing this, by the way. So that's that. And the syllabus just comes up, shows you what to do that day, and all the our resources and FA resources on the right-hand side. You click if there's a PowerPoint or a scenario or questions to ask. It's all there. So there's that. Well, that's the end of today's, this month's podcast. I hope it was useful to you. Hope you had fun if you're commuting or want to go try out those tips. That'd be great. You know, go do that. And then for initial CFI classes, if you're looking to do that, you can look at our website, cfibootcamp.com. There's a live calendar there, and these classes are starting to fill up. So that end-of-year stuff, you know, they usually are busiest months, or now, October. Our October class had, I think, 9 or 11 in it in Palo Alto. It's pretty busy. And then the upcoming classes are starting to get full. And then the January, February classes, of all things, get full because people then say, okay, man, my New Year's resolution, I'm going to finally get it and have it before the summer. So that's what we got. So anyway, thanks for tuning in, and listen for us next month for another episode of Flight Training the Way I See It. This has been a production of Flight Training the Way I See It. News, tips, and opinions.